So over the last week and over the next couple of weeks, we're talking about mission. And I know that some people come to church and they love a good traditional sermon spot, and don't worry, we'll get one of those next week. But we tried to take some opportunities to get the voices of our congregation, to get some different voices around this perspective on mission, and today is no exception. I reached out to a few people who I just love sitting down and hearing the stories from. And these are people who would never ask to come onto the platform themselves. It's really important to recognize that. In many respects, I'm asking them up a little bit under duress today. But I did give them time, and they considered it, and they prayed about it, and they decided that it was a story worth sharing. And so today we get to be privy to some of the stories that for some people, and maybe you have some of these stories yourself, are like, that's just me living, right? And yet behind these particular expressions of living is a deep missional purpose that I want to kind of draw out today. Because as people on mission every day, each of us is called to a mission field. Each of us is called with the particular wirings and gifts that God has given us to serve the people God has placed in our world. And so maybe some stories today will inspire you to think about, one, ways that you can be reaching out, but two, maybe ways that you already are, that maybe you just got to give a little bit more credit to. Maybe God's using you to plant a few more seeds than you realized. And so today I want to invite up Jeff, and I want to invite up Amy, and I want to invite up Rupert, who's still over here, which is wonderful, to come and join us. Would you welcome them up as they come up today? Just going to put a couple of these down, make some space. We had to sit up high because, you know, there's not enough depth on the platform, but, you know, it'll be fine. Now, some of you guys may know these guys in varying capacities. And what we could do, you know, a lot of introductions, I kind of just want to kick off with some stories because you guys are all incredible in your own right. And again, these guys are so humble, right? And so again, under duress. But I hope that today, as you guys share some stories of the ways that God is using you, that people might be inspired the same way that I have been inspired. I'm actually going to kick off with you, Ames, if that's all right. You've got a microphone just next to you there. Now, I love chatting with Amy because every time I chat with her, she just shares these incredible stories. And I don't know if you realize how significant they are, but they're super significant to me. But even last week, we were chatting on Sunday, and you were talking about the time when you were working as a cleaner in the hospital and the song American Pie. American Pie was significant. Do you reckon you can share with me and share with us, like, tell us a bit of the story around this song, American Pie, because I just thought it was classic.
Yes, it was a while ago now, and we had this older gentleman that had been on the ward for a while and had been going through some rough times, and I just noticed that whenever he was in a good mood, he would hum this song. And one day he asked me, he said, "I notice you sing when you and hum when you clean. Do you think you could sing this song? It's my favourite." So I made sure that just about every day when I walked into his room, I said, you know, "Good morning, how's your day going?" And as I started doing my day-to-day things, I would either pick up from where he was humming and singing or just pick up the tune and just start humming it. And I just loved the way that even when he was down or tired, he would just smile and I would just see this happiness in him.
I love the fact that the way that it kind of began was because you are someone who loves humming and singing when you are cleaning. Like, I know this to be true. I love the fact that he picked up on the tunes that you were humming and singing. And because you also had other songs, I know that you would hum and sing quite a fair bit. What were some of the other ones that were kind of classics, I suppose, for you?
Kind of classics, things that a lot of the time had a good, steady, constant rhythm. So a lot of the time when I was in the main corridors, I would sing songs like different variations of Amazing Grace, and 10,000 Reasons was a big one, and quite often the songs that were in kids' church.
Yeah, absolutely. My God Is So Big was, I think,
yes,
a classic, wasn't it?
That was a big one.
And it's amazing that even as patients, they're seeing you in these places and they're picking up on this kind of characteristic, and that they would actually invite you to be like, "Hey, I notice that you do this." And obviously they see something within you and they're like, "Hey, can you sing American Pie?" I just love the fact that they invited you to be part of what was something that was going to ultimately bless them each day. You kind of held the story a bit for me last week when you said one day you went by and he was gone. And I thought, what happened?
I immediately started thinking, oh, no, I know he was very unwell. Has something happened? So I just said to the nurse, I noticed that this gentleman's gone. Are he and his wife okay? And they said, well, actually, in the last couple of days since you've been off, he's just taken this great turn. And even though he's still unwell, they allowed him to go home.
Yeah, amazing.
Which was just amazing to hear, made my day.
So good. Just these opportunities down the hallway, sharing what God has placed within you and blessing the people around you. When you shared this story with me, I was reminded of a passage from Colossians chapter 3, 16. It's one we talk about a lot here at ASBC as people on mission every day, which is, of course, the idea of that in everything that we do, I might even have it on the screen, in verse 17, and whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. We talk about this a lot. It's just like whatever you are doing, whether you're mopping a floor or whatever it is, it's like give thanks to whatever you do, do it in the name of Jesus. But the piece that comes before that in verse 16, I love this. Let the message of Christ dwell in you, among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts. And when I read that, I'm like, oh, that is Amy, right? Like just carrying these psalms and hymns and songs in, as you went about your business and then God using them, right, to honour and really value people. So I just think that's a really cool story, Amy. I think it's an amazing one. Now, I'm going to move over to you, Jeff. Now, Jeff, you technically work in retail, right? So for those of you who don't know Jeff, he works over at Exotic, the homewares and everything else store. I was going to say, I feel like it's not generous enough to call it homewares. But it's certainly for me, it's hospitality in the way that you go about it. And one of the things I really love is the way that you know people and you know their stories. Because this kind of attention to detail is something that makes people feel valued. So can you share a time, I suppose, when you've recognised that a particular gift or action would truly resonate with a person and why, I suppose, you feel that's important? It's a tricky one, isn't it?
It is. I thought of two examples, being a number of years ago, some of my friends had a newborn baby. And I just made an extra meal and dropped it over there unannounced. And that made their day. She was just so excited that thinking someone's dropped the meal off. And a number of years later, she said with a little boy who's grown up, oh, this kind man gave me a meal when you were born. Like, it was so nice. But she could see the generosity, I suppose, I showed her and her family. And she does the same now as well.
Yeah, amazing. So how did you know this person, out of curiosity?
I used to work with her husband years ago, and I just thought, I love cooking, so I'll just bless him with a meal, and that was great.
So I love the fact that you're like, okay, so you worked with the husband, and you heard that that had a child, and you're like, what can I just do to bless them? What's going to be useful? And for that meal to then be producing dividends almost years later. This is Jeff the chef. They probably wouldn't call you that. But this is Jeff. This is Jeff, right? Yeah, he's one of those people who drops off meals, right, unexpectedly. That's a really, really cool story. Tell us another one. I could do this all day, guys. Honestly, it's amazing. And Jeff's just like, oh, I don't want to share my stories. I'm like, you got to tell these stories.
Just recently, I've been on the receiving end of some meals as well. One of my other chef friends from many years ago, she cooks for a number of us. And just every now and again, just drops a meal off, and I'm thinking, wow, that's exciting, to be receiving a meal rather than just giving it out.
Isn't that incredible? Because that's exactly right. It's amazing when you're positioned to give, and when you have this posture of giving toward others. Sometimes you're giving, and then you don't actually get to fully experience what that kind of means on the other end. So isn't that lovely that you can kind of be part of the other side of that as well?
It is.
Absolutely. I'll share one of my stories. I often go into Exotic when I need a particular gift, and usually I see Jeff there, and I'm like, Jeff, I need a gift for X person. Tell me about them. Tell me about them, because Jeff's been here a long time. He knows most people, and he'll say something like, she likes horses. And I'll be like, really? I had no, like I said, like I would have no idea. So anyway, then we kind of work through the shop. We try to find something that characterizes, you know, horses or hospitality or something that is a characteristic. And I had one just the other day when someone was finishing up an Alice, and we kind of found some stuff that we felt would be really applicable. And when we handed that over to her at Minister's Fellowship, you could see the way that she was moved. Like that it wasn't just a gift. It was something that actually represented her story. And I just go, oh, man, Jeff is just so good at that. And he'll never say it himself. He'd never say it. So I have to say it 1,000 times. But it's this sense of going like God has placed that within him in the same way that God has placed things within you. And when I hear stories like this, I'm reminded again of Romans 12. This was when I first went to youth when I was about 15 years old. We had this little bulletin that was given to us every youth. And the first line on that bulletin was, don't just pretend to love people, really love them. And it was from Romans 12, 6, where it says, love must be sincere. Love must be sincere is often how it's translated. And so there's a sense of like we've all got these different gifts according to the grace that God's given to each of us. And so if it's prophesying, prophesy. If it's serving, serve. If it's teaching, teach. If it's to encourage. I'm not going to give too much extra in the Bible, but if it is giving, then give generously, you know. If it's to lead, live diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. But love must be sincere. And I just think that for me, these moments, we should not underestimate the significance of a meal or a detail in the context of our mission. Now, Rupert, you're a teacher.
Yes.
You're a teacher.
Right. Here we go.
And we've got a number in our congregation who are teachers or work within the educational kind of space. And we've had a number of conversations, and even in youth ministry, we're aware of this. It's one thing to be a teacher professionally. It's another thing to be a trusted adult in the life of young people. So tell us a little bit about how your faith informs how you navigate both those aspects of what it means to be a teacher, because I'm sure there's many out here who will resonate with this as well.
Yeah, well, the thing is, as teachers, all of us, whether it's primary, secondary, or whatever level, teaching is not just like a job that you do. It's actually a calling. So as you said, we're on mission. And so we every day spend more time sometimes than the parents themselves with the students. Mm-hmm. So the impact of the teachers is great. It's massive. And so when we are on mission, we call that teaching, we share our lives and we get the privilege to do life with these students. And as I said to Gavin before the service, the students watch your life closely. Mm-hmm. Not just the lesson plans and all those kind of things, but they watch the way you interact with them.
Yeah.
How you deal with stress, trouble, resistance, swearing, all these things. And they see that and they can ask questions later because they see if you're real. And if you're talking about your faith, and which I do, then it's my personal journey. But then they know where I come from.
Yeah.
So I'm on mission, and so all teachers. And as you said, everybody, but specifically education.
One of the things you noted is that some of these kids, depending upon their situation, they might almost spend more time with you than they do with their own parents.
They do.
Season. Yeah,
they do. And I think for us as teachers, the subjects that I teach lends itself to speak about things that everyone challenges or find challenging, but also young people specifically. And that's what gives you meaning in your life, what gives you purpose in your life, what gives you hope in your life, and what gives you identity. And these are massive questions for all people, but specifically for young people when they're in that phase of who am I, where am I going, what am I doing? And being a part of that link in that chain and being able to speak is a privilege.
One of the things that you shared with me on Thursday, I got to kind of share a little bit with the St. Charles Senior College Year 12s, which is great. We had a bit of fun there and chatting afterwards. You'd be better at sharing the story, but I love the fact that your faith is on display. Your faith is on display. You're also professional in the way you go about doing what you do, but the kids know that you're a Jesus follower, right?
Yes.
So if you can, share us a little bit about just that interaction that we had a bit of a laugh about.
When I teach my subjects, it's when we deal with meaning, purpose, hope, and identity, it's very deep questions. And so when you throw a young person with those questions, they're like, Mr. Krauss, this is very deep. And they say, it sounds like you're preaching. And I said, well, easy, I'm not preaching. I didn't mention Jesus at all. I didn't say anything. You said Jesus. I was like, I was not involved with that. And I said, oh, Mr. Krauss, you come from Adelouan. I said, well, easy. I'm here now, so all good. And so the idea is being in a Christian school or Christian environment, it's lovely, and having that privilege to be in a country where you can actually have that. But that doesn't mean that as Christians in the state system, you don't have that calling. I think it's even more so to be on mission in that space. to actually engage with the students in a way where your faith is on display, and they ask you questions, and I'm happy to answer them.
That's right. I like how you talked about, you know, that they're always testing you, right? And so if they know you're a Christian, and I know Jeff and Amy have spoken about this, like when people know you're a Christian, like the eyes are on, they're testing you, and there's that question like, oh. Sounds like preaching. I don't know much about preaching, but it sounds like preaching. You know, it's just like, what are you doing there? What are you doing there? And it's incredible how that extra focus and attention creates missional opportunity, you know, for these little seeds to be planted here and there. For me, I think, you know, one of the things I think we don't often think about is Jesus and his disciples. Like, again, when we see the disciples depicted, they're often, you know, older and adults. These guys most likely were very, very young men. They only had to be 13 to go through bar mitzvah, and so most likely his disciples were very, very young. They were following him, and it's one thing to follow a rabbi and just hear his teachings, but there's another thing to actually walk in his dust. And so as teachers in any context, that is absolutely true, that example speaks volumes along with the words themselves. So that's really, really cool. Now, Ames, we mentioned a little bit later that I was really curious where you were positioned in the hospital, right? Because you were saying, you were saying that now there's like hundreds of cleaners who work in the hospital. But when you were cleaning, it was a much smaller crew than that. But you had a particular kind of spot that you would generally kind of do your cleaning in. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Basically, when I started at the hospital, I was cleaner number 13. And as of the start of the year, they broke the 200 mark.
Yeah, wow. So it's completely changed.
So when I started there, we only did main corridors and basic public areas. And after a couple of months, we started cleaning the wards.
Yep.
And I was positioned on the renal ward for about 5 years thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I got to make these great connections because I'd know that, you know, this person's going to come on these days and this person's going to come on in these days.
Yep.
And we'd get some patients that might come and stay for a bit longer, and it would really give a great chance to really get to know people, not just, oh, you're a face in the hallway, but to get to spend some quality time with them.
Absolutely.
And at one point we had one lady who was on the ward as a long-term patient. She was there for about 18 months. And I was really touched one day when we'd been praying together at the end of the day, and she goes, actually, today I'm having them coming and they're doing communion, because she was reaching that point where things weren't working. She goes, do you think you might come?
Yeah,
and
wow.
I said, wow, I would be absolutely honoured. Yeah. And I went and I finished work and they all went, where are you going? I'm going back upstairs. But you're finished work. Why would you do that? I said, well, I've been invited to go and share this meal with these people, and I consider it a great honour that I was invited to come and sit and pray and share communion with these people before she looked at the next step and what that would mean for her.
That's incredible. I don't know if you picked up something that Amy... Yeah. I don't know if you picked up something that Amy said there. So matter-of-factly, it was the end of the day and I was praying with them. And then you just kept your story going, and you're kind of like, wait a second. Like, what happened? And why, like, you were just there, you know, like, these kind of moments of being like, well, of course that's what we do. You speak to it, what was it?
Sorry, it wasn't so much things get planned, but things just happen.
Yeah.
It's incidental. I was going from doing this to, do you think you could do this? Or I'd go to another area and, can you do this for us?
Yep.
Sure.
Absolutely. I love how you say, like, it wasn't planned, but what was a constant was the fact that you were in that ward for 5 years. Like, you were there positioned, people were getting to know you, they understood your rhythms, you understood theirs, particularly within the context of renal where you have a lot of people coming through for dialysis and all this kind of stuff. There is familiarity bred. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that you're kind of like, oh, it just kind of happens. But it happens also because you're there and you're consistent and you keep showing up, you know. And I think that speaks wonders to our context as well. Sometimes we just need to be somewhere and keep on showing up. I was chatting to a lawyer. I was over in Sydney a few years ago, and he was working in a giant law firm, which he expressed as one of the most difficult places to be a Christian and some of the culture that was there. And he said, people knew that I was a Christian, but it took me 10 years before someone asked me, you know, what it meant or how to do things differently or whatever it might be. And he said, but that's when the floodgate broke. But he's just like, I was just faithfully there for 10 years, working in the hallways, so to speak, faithfully, set an example, and then the floodgates kind of opened. And I think that is so true for each of us as well. But we need to show that faithfulness. Absolutely. I felt like you were going to say something, Rupert. You're kind of like,
up when she was saying those things, I was like, yep, that's
well, exactly. speak to it. Don't let me lead the track.
No, it's just the idea of doing the faithful. As all teachers, we're called to do life with these young people, but the strongest message is not preaching so much the gospel, but the relationships that you build,
yeah,
like you mentioned. And if you don't have those relationships of integrity with the students and with your staff that you work with, then your word and your testimony doesn't match up. And so
absolutely,
that's the key. And that's a challenge for all Christians, obviously, absolutely, in every phase of life. But that is it's a massive challenge when you have so many eyeballs on you all the time.
Absolutely.
So, that's it.
Oh, so many eyeballs. And I mean, one of the things that I suppose is kind of leading into that, that kind of the crowd who is watching, I always think about Jesus and the crowd who is watching his every word and deed. There's this fascinating moment where you see the way that Jesus actually responds to them and sees them. It says in Matthew chapter 9, verse 35, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. And so he's moving, he's proclaiming, he's healing, like bringing healing, and whether that be physical healing, but we also know that healing and restoration and shalom and building, it comes in all sorts of forms. But when he saw the crowds, verse 36, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Like, I suppose, you know, for people you encounter, Rupert, how does your heart break? What areas of life do you see your heart break when you look at your students?
In my new position in this role that God has called me to, I have access to support students in a way that's unique in that sense that we've got people that are working below us. But the thing is, it's actually about that compassion of when you hear the stories of the students and their lives that they come from, and the challenges in their domestic situation, it's about compassion. Mm-hmm. It's about how we can pour that acceptance and compassion into their hearts and the positions that we hold with these young people to support them to live better, be in a safe environment, whether it's at home, in relationships and things like that. And so God has given teachers the position to not only safeguard the young people when they're exposed to things that make them feel unsafe, but that relationships that you build, this thing that God's called me to do is actually a platform where you can actually physically help young people to put them in connections with local communities and organizations to help them to become stronger. And so the thing is, it's not just a job.
Yeah.
It is a calling. And so when God has called you into education and you have access to support these young people, it's a high calling and absolutely, must be done with prayer because it's not your strength.
Absolutely.
It's not yours.
It's not ours. And I mean, we're super aware, I'll throw it to you, Jeff, in a moment, like, you know, that heartbreak and that that pain that people are feeling, we're super aware, particularly, and you've been in town a really long time, Jeff, you've seen the ups and downs of Alice, and we recognise that that there's a lot of nervousness and tension in town at the moment because of a whole bunch of stuff that is going on. People maybe are becoming a bit more insular, a bit more suspicious. I was chatting to someone last night and was saying, gee, I just don't get out to parties anymore. I haven't for a really long time because I'm a bit more nervous about going out. And this is someone who'd grown up here in Alice. Just as Rupert has shared around, like, as a teacher, like that idea of getting alongside those people in that point of anxiety and with compassion. Tell us a little bit about what some of the things you've just been doing, even small things, that you seek to kind of, I suppose, combat maybe some of that anxiety and nervousness, some of that suspicion. What have been some things you've been doing on LATS, maybe a bit more locally?
In the street where I live on Lats Crescent, when all the rain happened back at over the Christmas period, like the weeds grew.
Yep.
So for about 2 weeks and since then out there cleaning the footpath. But in that time, meeting people that walk their dogs or their kids and just actually talking with people as well.
Yeah.
Seeing those regular people come through and even waving to people as they drive past in their cars, even the bus driver too. I just think that created a connection or acknowledgement that I was in their environment, they were in mine. I'm just being nice to them, you know. So I loved that, being out there. When we had Neighbour Day, I made biscuits and I delivered 15 batches of biscuits to my immediate neighbours. Some I knew and others I didn't know. And that's a little bit scary, knocking on someone's door that lived nearby, but I had no idea who they were.
But you did have biscuits to defend you, so that was all right.
I had biscuits, yeah. But it was just a lovely opportunity to just be out there in the community and just sharing, and then hearing back as well from different ones saying, oh, thanks for the biscuits, they were just great, you know, but thanks for being a good neighbour as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is, there's something that just one, putting yourself out there and being like, actually, I'm going to be different. I'm not just going to conform to kind of maybe some of the kind of the cultures and the fears that are circulating within, you know, this context of present, but I'm going to be one who actually breaks through and makes a decision to, again, position myself in somewhere that's going to interact with people, and I'm going to make sure that these interactions are positive, you know. I just feel like sometimes we forget the significance of the way that God can use these kind of small but deeply significant actions to affect our communities and our networks. It's no surprise that Jesus teaches over and over again that the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, right, that is planted. Like Jesus was all about the small actions that matter. You know, he would tell the parables, you know, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed which a man took and planted in his field. I just love the idea that the man has a field and he planted a mustard seed, like one seed. Like, it's just the way it's described. It's just like he's just planting one seed. Oh, we'll just see what happens. But then Jesus describes it a little bit further on. He says, though it is the smallest of all seeds, when it grows, it is the largest of all garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds may come and perch in its branches. Now, from a scientific perspective, that's kind of accurate, but actually from a Hebrew perspective and a rabbinic perspective, you can't really tell, but he's almost making a joke, right? This is Jesus using hyperbole, right? Like birds nesting in there. Like, people are thinking of this mustard seed going like, what? You're turning this into like something that is like so much bigger than even science would suggest it is. Jesus is just saying, whatever you think the limitations of this mustard seed are, it's bigger. And then when you see the limitations, there again, limitations. It's bigger once again. And so we never know the significance of that acknowledgement of, say, the bus driver going past or that interaction with the person walking their dog that just says, actually, you are valued, you matter. Yeah. And yet we sometimes need to make that choice and put ourselves out there cook a batch of cookies, far more cookies than I think I could ever cook, but, you know, to actually put ourselves out there in those spaces. But that is missional, right? Yeah. That is missional. And we shouldn't forget that these are missional acts. We might just be like, that's just who I am, that's just what I do. These are missional actions, and we should and ought to claim them. I'm reminded just of the power of acknowledgement again. What did Jesus do? He saw Zacchaeus up the tree, and he acknowledged him. That salvation, as Jesus described it today, salvation has come to this household. That salvation began with an acknowledgement of the short man up a tree. The bleeding woman, right, when she reached out to grab Jesus, the corner of his garment was healed. He said, who touched me? He felt like power came out from him. He didn't want to stop. Oh, he wanted to stop. He didn't let the crowd just take him on. He wanted to know what had happened. And then when he saw the woman, he said, daughter, your faith has healed you. Mm-hmm. These moments of acknowledgement, right, are powerful. They're life transformative. And so we ask the question, who in our world do we need to acknowledge that we otherwise wouldn't have to? Yeah. Like, this is a missional question for every single one of us. I'm conscious of time. I think we might kind of probably even just wrap up a few stories there. But I suppose I just want to provide one last opportunity. If anything's kind of come to mind, you guys, as I sat down with each of you, I love just how matter-of-factly you do this. I love the fact that God has just like hardwired you for this and be like, this is just how I go about life, right? Isn't this how everyone just goes about life? Well, actually, I think we all need to be challenged on that, whether it's considering where we're positioned, whether it's considering how to love people with sincere kind of love that deeply knows them, whether it's being super aware of the influence of our words and our actions and the way that they build a foundation for trust and conversation. Just as we wrap up, I want to acknowledge the way that you guys are doing this, and many people here are doing this. But we need to be encouraging each other in this pursuit as people on mission every day. Was there anything else you wanted to share? I just want to close it up if something's come to mind.
I just want to end with just the idea of praying
for
when you go into your workspace. It's not just a job. So like I said before, you're praying for your colleagues, you're praying for everybody from the cleaners to the teachers to the inspectors to the leaders. It's just cover them in prayer and what your role is in that.
Absolutely. It's God who creates these opportunities, eh? God is forever at work. We put ourselves out there, but God is the one who is working things around. And some of these seeds that are planted will only produce fruit in 10, 15 years' time, potentially. What were you saying? Sometimes we're the link in the chain.
We're the link in the chain.
We're the link in the chain. Yeah. And we're doing our part. But God is always at work.
Yeah.
Just as Jesus said, my Father is always at work, so I must always be at work. It's like this is a posture. It's a posture for each of us. And now next week, I just want to share with you, there will be a normal sermon. Oh, thank goodness. But also, we've got a really exciting thing that we're going to be doing. Up in the hallway there, we're going to be printing some big maps of Alice Springs and of Australia, and we're going to be putting them on that wall. And we're going to be asking the question of every single one of us, where is our primary place of missional influence? Whether that be within the home or a workplace or a sporting group or whatever it is. And we're going to get these maps and we're going to start like layering these maps with these places where people from ASBC are on mission every day so we can be praying. So when we see those dots at Exotic or at home or Urara or at CSC or wherever it may be, we can be praying that people would be that influence and be that missional kind of impact person in those contexts, because it's ultimately God who is going to be shifting and transforming lives here in Alice Springs, and yet he chooses to use us. So let's pray together as we have been prompted. Jesus, I just love these stories that emerge, because I know that they are just a few of many, many stories of people who are at work having that missional posture here in Alice Springs. And so God, for each of us, I want to pray that you would bring to mind, hey God, where is it that you have specifically called me? What hallway am I in? What desk do I stand behind? What relationship and what is the name of the person that you are calling me to be that influence in, God? And I want to pray that we would know the mustard seeds in our hands. God, you have given us not just one, but handfuls to scatter. And God, we want to scatter them faithfully, Lord, wherever it is that you've called us. I want to pray against fear. Lord, if we are confronted and we're intimidated by the prospect of being missional within our context that you've called us, I want to pray that you would grow boldness in us. Again, we're reminded of the church in Acts chapter 2 when they came against persecution. Their prayer wasn't that the persecution would stop, but they actually prayed for boldness. It's like, hey, we're not stopping doing this. We just want boldness to go ahead and do it, God, because we know that we live in a place, Lord, as we all do, that is crying out for hope and for healing. Lord, sheep without a shepherd, God. And so, God, we just want to do our part to draw people to the good shepherd that is you, Lord. And you call your sheep. You call them by name and they know you. And so, Jesus, I just want to pray, Lord, that we would see here in Alice Springs breakthroughs in all these different areas of our world, in families and in workplaces and in sporting groups and in hobby areas. God, you are at work. We don't need to take you there, God. You are at work. We just need to point you out, carrying those songs, carrying those stories, and carrying that kind of love that represents you well. And so, Jesus, Lord, this is our prayer. Lord, that we might be light, that we might be the city on the hill, that people would see our good deeds and glorify the Father in heaven, just as you instructed us to do. In your name we pray. Amen.